Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world. Well, welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm your host, Tony Sager, running solo today, and it's a real pleasure. I got a special guest on, someone from my local area that I've gotten to know over the last several years, Tina Williams-Caroma. Tina, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself to the audience.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it. So as Tony indicated, I am also local here with him in Maryland. So I have been in the cyber tech field for probably about 22, 23 years now. I started my career as a software developer at Lockheed Martin. As a part of a leadership program, I was in there with them. It was rotational. So I realized early in my career that something other than software development was going to be that which would interest me. So when I pivoted into enterprise network security, I was hooked. So got to do some computer forensics and then some availability load testing once I transitioned to Unisys, and from Unisys went to go work with another small business as VP of their civilian division, helping to port over things they were doing in the defense and intelligence sector into the civilian sectors. That company became my services business's T-Secure's first customer. I have been a full-time entrepreneur for the past 11 or so years, to include spinning out a separate product company from T-Secure called CyDeploy. So very immersed in the cybersecurity field, and for better or for worse, I've seen a lot of the problems. And I think it's fun and innovative to think of ways to solve those problems and build teams around solving those problems.
No, great stuff. I sense a kindred spirit here, Tina. So I did spend several years of my early career developing, I'll call it highly specialized software for spooky people. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I took from that was no responsible employer should ever pay me to write software. It is like, I guarantee there's all, now my standard message was, don't worry, boss, there's only one bug left I'm tracking down. And that was always true, no matter what I did. Right. You know, there's a certain joy in breaking things that I found much more satisfying than trying to.
Yes.
I have great respect for developers, but
me too.
You know, I have to admire from afar. I've got to admit. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your perspective of the Center for Internet Security. So one of the things that brought us together when we connected was you taking some of the sort of value that we create, and you know, and this is the model for us, right? Is how do we deliver value, not necessarily by us doing it directly or writing the code or building products, but by folks like you taking them on. So give me a little background on how that happened and what you're...
I have been a very long time fan and ingester of the work products from Center for Internet Security. So even starting very early in my career, having the responsibility for looking at applications and systems and identifying some of their weaknesses, not vulnerabilities, right, that you might find with a scan, but just from a design and configuration perspective, how should systems be configured? What are the settings and what are the options? And not having to come up with that like in a vacuum, right? And having to research it. Some of the earliest solutions that I found are the configuration guides that Center for Internet Security has been publishing for years now. And so for me, as an individual that has not only been involved in identifying the problems, but helping organizations to solve those problems and proactively, the work products and outputs have been extremely valuable. So sometimes, you know, for defense specific systems, they'll point to the STIGs, but there are a lot of customers and entities that need similar help and support around configuration and in particular small businesses and in helping them understand what a responsible baseline, secure baseline is. And so that is what I have found to be extremely helpful. And I know there's a lot of other automated tools and products that you all have created since then, but I certainly go back to your very early days in having some of those initial work products. And even to the point where, you know, one of the, I mentioned SiteDeploy, separate product company, I spun out, like that is very focused on positioning organizations to be more proactive in their cybersecurity posture and doing a bunch of research, market research and the like. Just to solidify a lot of the numbers and the need in the market for SiteDeploy, a lot of the cyber issues that we see are due to misconfigured and unpatched systems. Like organizations simply are not making updates quick enough. Now, a part of that problem certainly can be being aware of what those, you know, updates are, you know, and that's why you have the scanners. And that's also why Center for Internet Security products around configuration settings are also so valuable. So SiteDeploy is really focused on positioning organizations to automate their ability to harden their systems in advance and also be able to quickly patch as new actual vulnerabilities, not just configuration weaknesses, become known.
No, I think, and you know, one of the things that you recognized, and this was the observation. So I grew up at, you know, the National Security Agency and spent my career as the vulnerability finder, you know, and I got to run the big organizations. And boy, that's great fun, but it doesn't fix problems directly. And an observation, once, you know, the NSA red teams, blue teams, and folks like that, that were part of my responsibility, realizing that we just kept seeing the same problems over and over again. And we go, well, we told them. Well, you know, the business of fixing problems is a different problem. And knowing there are flaws is just one element, right? You've got budgets and management and manageability and breakage of applications, all that kind of stuff. But so here's the story, and you understood this, I think, intuitively, that I started asking people that attacked other nations for a living. And I would ask them this question. Please agree with or disagree with this statement. A well-managed system is a hard target. And to a person, these are some of the leading minds in the U.S. government, right? People who are professionally attacking others. Agree or disagree with that? A well-managed system is a hard target. Yes, it is. Absolutely. Unless we really need to, we don't bother. Because there's 1,000 easier targets, different ways to get our objective, right? And well-managed meant the things you just described. Well-configured, patched, you know, an understanding. And a lot of it was about visibility, that professional attackers thrive on invisibility. They are willing to be patient, build infrastructure, know who talks to who and how things are set up. And, you know, again, I've lived among such folks. They're amazing at what they do, but they're not superhuman. And so lack of visibility is tremendously important to them, right? Because they have a risk model too. They don't like to get caught. They don't want to spend millions of dollars and then get caught. They don't want to risk exposing operations. But here's your problem, I think. And I think we've discussed this before. You're marketing against magic. You're marketing against exotic threat feeds and complicated tools. And so what is that like, right? Because what you're doing is like, oh, manage well. Yeah, of course. But look at this, you know, 10-foot tall adversaries and nation states. How could I possibly defend myself, right? Is that your world?
Oh, Tony.
You've got stories. Okay.
And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Happy 25 years, CIS. Back in 2000, a bunch of experts from government, academia, and private industry met at the Cosmos Club in DC.
Their mission was clear: help local communities, businesses, government, and critical infrastructure defend against cyber threats, regardless of budget or expertise.
CIS was born to fulfill that mission.
So, Tony, how have we done so far?
Well, let's take a look at the numbers. We detected and mitigated close to 320,000 cyber events protecting public and private sector organizations.
We also blocked over 3 trillion potential connections to known malicious, suspicious, or otherwise risky sites in defense of critical infrastructure.
In 2024 alone, our guides received 1.5 million downloads for their straightforward, actionable security guidance.
And let's not forget 150 episodes of Cybersecurity Where You Are.
Certainly unforgettable, of course not. And honestly, Sean, that's just the beginning.
Absolutely. It's been an incredible 25 years, and we're just getting started.
The future of cybersecurity is evolving fast, and so are we at CIS.
We may not have all the answers yet,
but we've got the right people, the right mission, and a global community behind us.
So here's to the next 25 years of innovation, collaboration, and impact.
Join us on the journey at cisecurity.org.
I have stories. Yeah, I mean, literally so. So in one word, how are you doing against that? It's hard. It really is. And I actually think, you know, even being in this market for more than 2 decades, I still underestimated the where the market was in recognizing this is a problem, right? Really recognizing the fact that organizations have to get back to the basics. And, you know, one thing I do appreciate is that, you know, and I'm hoping that it'll be helpful in Gartner kind of giving it a fancy magic term of preemptive cybersecurity. And like one subset of preemptive cybersecurity is attack surface management, proactive attack surface management, right? Which is exactly where CyDeploy falls, right? It's proactively recognizing what are the assets in your inventory, you know, how do they depend on each other? What's their current state of configuration? How are things connected in? What's talking to what? Should it be talking to those things? Are those dependencies appropriate? You know, what are the vulnerabilities? Just having that intense asset intelligence and being able to position organizations to understand what they need to change in their environment, what they need to remove, what they need to configure properly, what they need to, you know, close from a ports perspective, you know, what they need to patch, and then giving them an automated means to understand, you know, all of those issues quickly so they can make a change. But it's, you know, Gartner's prediction is that, you know, by 2028, I think that about 25% of current detection and response tools will be displaced by preemptive cybersecurity tools, right? That doesn't mean that detection and response, which these are all the fun magic tools, right, aren't needed. They definitely have their place. But with some of the research Gartner's been putting out of late, it's just recognizing that it's a little late, like, oh, look, you know, beep, 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 someone's in the system. And it's just like, yeah, but that's just like somebody doing a smash and grab in a physical house or store or car. They can grab stuff pretty quickly, you know? And so once they're already in, like, great for letting us know there's a place for that. But, you know, to your point, like, you have to make the targets a lot less attractive in the first place so they don't want to break and enter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things, and I know you follow our work, you know, that, you know, trying to move that, you know, good management from, like, again, oh, it's housekeeping, it's hygiene, you know, mere hygiene. I always love that, mere hygiene. Well, but what we've tried to do is connect that to the actions of attackers. And we have our community defense model. We work with all the threat, you know, Verizon, CrowdStrike, all those kind of good folks. Because the point is, we don't just, you know, hygiene is actually a pretty complex topic by itself, right? We don't wash our hands just for the sake of washing our hands. We know we do it to interrupt the transmission vectors of a particular set of things that lead to disease. And so kind of conceptually, I often call our work as we're translators. Mm-hmm. We translate mm-hmm. complicated things okay. into behaviors.
Yes.
And those behaviors are things that we know how to do, right? We manage, we identify, we get visibility. And so that's a really important concept. And again, it's our responsibility to help make that tie. to get us out of this. Well, that's just hygiene. Yes. I care about nation state attackers. Well,
right.
I know nation state attackers. They like bad hygiene because they don't want to spend money. They don't want to take risks. All right. But the other thing that was really an uphill message for me back at NSA was this. I get it. You know, by the way, the truly at-risk, high-dollar, you know, target is willing to spend a lot of money because there's a lot at stake, right? They're willing to pay for those exotic threat feeds and better insight than these people in this nation are coming after me because it's really critical to them.
Yes.
But no matter how sophisticated, fancy all that stuff is, no matter how nuanced your insight is, you still have to execute stuff. So the stuff, right, this management stuff, you need no matter what, right?
No
because
what.
You got to execute on. This is I had this argument with multi-star people.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we'll attack them and we'll find out their tradecraft and what they're going to do. And I would say, well, and then what are you going to do with it? Oh, well, we're going to tell people.
Right.
We're going to tell people. You're going to send email to every system administrator in the DOD. They can't get to their inbox already, right? They need to execute. And execute means visibility.
Yes.
Block something, find something,
yes.
You know, et cetera, yes. Right? So you'll need that infrastructure. Now, for most of our economy, a well-managed infrastructure is enough to operate responsibly, right? It's not going to solve world hunger, but hey, bad guys are going to go elsewhere. And it raises the cost and all that. But even for the most sophisticated, you have to think of it as there's a set of, you know, I used to call it the action architecture, some goofy name like that back in the day, to say, I need that no matter what, no matter how nuanced my information. And so, you know, you're approaching it kind of from the foundations first because there's value for everybody in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Very and, important. You know, like one, you know, when you go to like that, you know, you mentioned the cost, you know, to the attacker. One, like my kind of, you know, maybe like North Star metric, right? Like big picture is the cost globally of cybercrime is in the trillions. Like that is the cost globally. Budgets globally are in the billions. And the gap between the cost and the budgets is continuing to widen, right? And so that just says that the current approach is not sustainable. Like the billions being invested in disproportionately, you know, because you need it across, you know, the cybersecurity framework, every you know, function for appropriate governance, you know, centrally needs some investment. But a disproportionate amount of the investment has been in that detection and response, you know, sort of category, leaving under, you know, there's been less investment like in the identify and in the protect areas. Unfortunately, you know, like a lot in the recovery, you know, when you look at like ransomware payouts and things like that, that's, you know, that's your last.
your point is exactly right.
Yeah.
Do you know the name Sean Henry?
Yes.
Sean. Yeah. At CrowdStrike. I mean, many years ago, he was quoted in the paper. I called him. I said, did you really say that, dude? That is so good. And he said, right, if you remember the quote, anyone in organized crime who's not getting into this cyber business ought to be sued for malpractice. Did you really say that? He says, of course. Why would you run into a bank, pull a gun, put your life at risk, right? When, you know, 100 times the return at 100 times less risk, you would do this over the wire.
Yeah.
And even if you're not smart enough to do it yourself, you're certainly mean enough to kidnap somebody who is smart enough to do it for you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the economics just don't work. And, you know, the data points you have demonstrate that. And so, and at the same time, though, you know, markets are inherently noisy, right? And they kind of go where the interest is. And there's a need to distinguish myself, right? With sort of, I know more than the competitor knows about the bad guys that you care, you know, that kind of thing. And so we need the market, but it's very inefficient in that sense. And so it causes us all kinds of grief. So let me ask you about markets, because one of the things that that I know you're, you know, as an entrepreneur, right? So you came in kind of big government, you know, contractor kind of role, and decided to take a different route. And so you've done not only entrepreneurship for yourself, but I watch you as so active in the local community as an entrepreneur, as a mentor to others and stuff. So tell me about the kind of role that you see for yourself, you and your company as someone who is part of that community and a leader in that community.
Yeah, I've really throughout my career, and this is, you know, very early on, I always see that no matter where you are in your career, you're always further along than somebody else. And so that means you're always positioned to get people as far as you are. And that has been my mindset. I can get you as far as I've gone. And it's also my motivation for wanting to go further. The further I go, the further along I can get other people, right? And so it's just, you know, venturing into places and spaces that are underrepresented by, you know, someone like me. I find it very inspiring, and it's really a part of my, okay, Gina, keep pressing, motivation, because it is the case that I can, once I have charted that path, I can help someone else to navigate and chart that same path. Not that they'll, you know, take exactly, you know, all the steps. Everybody is an individual. They'll have their own nuances. But I think at the very least, it positions me to be able to speak from a place of experience. In fact, I have, there's a, the governor's for Maryland's, small business, conference is coming up. I think it's going to be on Veterans Day, in fact. And like the specific talk that I'm doing there is about all the resources and the like that I've been able to tap into and leverage both within the state and nationally to help move along from an entrepreneurial perspective. So just things to make other entrepreneurs aware of, hey, you know, it can be tough, like trying to bootstrap at different times and, you know, trying to stretch a dollar and make a dollar out of 15 cents, you know, to borrow a line from a song. And so even in that vein, it's just like, okay, I can get you as far as I have gotten. I can tell you the resources and the places to tap into and, you know, how to use this for, you know, this particular purpose or to achieve this particular milestone. And so, yeah, I think it's also, you know, the impetus behind the clinic, the cyber clinic that my services company partnered and pursued. It's a dual part. One, it's about creating opportunity for those looking to get into cybersecurity and have that hands-on experience. And it's also about providing expert services to using your term, Tony, I think cyber underserved. Entities that can't necessarily afford retail price for some of these assessment and remediation services. So, yeah, I could speak so much about the community element and like my passion, but that's just a really big part of my why.
So what inspired you to that? Because that's a number one amazing, and I've been observing your work there, but it's. It's a lot of energy, right? You spend a lot of time, a lot of your, you know, personal resources to take that role. And, you know, again, it's good in the sense of it's reputationally good, but I can guess that it's just a massive amount of work on your part. Was there an inspiration for you? Is this just you, or is this something that you saw and just a need there?
Yeah, you know, I think certainly my Christian faith is a big driver for that. I think we're all here for a reason. And I think we've all been given, you know, like gifts and talents and time to be here. You know, certainly, you know, one of my dad's quotes, you know, just hearing coming up, and he still quotes it a lot. You make a living by what you get. You make a life by what you give. And so, you know, and even the scripture of it being more blessed to give than to receive, you know, certainly like you're in business to turn a profit, to be profitable, to get revenue, et cetera. You know, certainly that's, you know, like the way of entrepreneurship. But I think from an identity perspective, you know, entrepreneur, cybersecurity professional is just one of my many titles. I think there's an overarching calling that in whatever endeavor I specifically apply myself to, entrepreneurship, cybersecurity professional, the overarching call still is tied to, you know, the first commandment, loving God with all my heart and loving others as myself. Like those, everything I do, I guess, and how I approach it is really, that's kind of my governing standard, right? And so that's how I, you know, gauge how I spend my time and you know, how I approach work and how I approach things. I think there's, you know, often faster paths to get to certain things if I don't have the same kind of governing model, right?
Well, this sort of call to service, right? I think, and it is, you know, one of the things that has kept me in this industry, right? CIS does not have a business model without committed volunteerism, right? With, I mean, amazing people who have this sense of this is our world, right? This world of technology, the internet, et cetera. And we feel some sense of ownership and the desire to give back. And I said, if, you know, one of the things CIS does, right? And by the way, this business is also full of incredibly brilliant,
yes,
incredibly opinionated people.
Yes.
So left to our own devices, we'll argue,
yes,
esoteric stuff, yeah, forever.
Yes.
But given a task, right? And what we do is provide professionalism to drive volunteerism. So volunteerism works best when there's a structure, a, yes, roadmap, someone is taking care of the details, yeah, and the publication and, yep, dealing with the IP issues and the, you know, and, mm-hmm, and all that kind of stuff. And so we view our work as stewardship. You know, we're holders of this goodwill, and we have a responsibility to do right by it, right? To take our good name and project it, right? Provide it a creative, constructive outlet. And I think that's important. So thanks for sharing the quote about your dad. Here's my dad's quote I'll share with you. He said, and my dad was, you know, a Depression era kid, backwoods West Virginia. And he would say to me, Tony, all you got in this life is your good name, but it's worth more if you spend it once in a while. And what he wanted to tell me was, it's not good enough to be popular, right? If you've earned that reputation, you have a responsibility to do something, right? To create good, to, you know, to use it for a good cause. Don't be satisfied with people like you. You know, you're making a good living. And so that was my inspiration for that. He was a lifelong three-war veteran, public servant. I never knew anything but public service. I never wanted a job. So I was, you know, you're the entrepreneur. Yeah. I was meant to be a drone, yeah, in a government bureaucracy, you know, one of these mindless, faceless, you know, people working in the back room. Didn't quite work out that way for me. I had a lot of opportunities. But that's why I'm fascinated by the role of the entrepreneur, right? The willingness to go out there and, you know, again, spend your good name, both create a business, but also create a community around you. I think that's... So one of the things I have to ask you about, our CISO was not able to join us today as co-host, but it's about soccer. I got to ask you got the jersey. Tell me about, there must be some connection here, right? With what the world calls football, what we call soccer,
yes,
and cybersecurity.
Yeah. On, oh my gosh. Like, get me started with all the analogies. You know, honestly, I think one of the biggest ones and most common ones that I use a lot is around attack surface management, right? Like, I'm a striker, that's my role. So I'm constantly looking to attack, right? Like that, but my context of soccer is the attack. And so, you know, the best goalies are the ones that know how to reduce that attack surface, right? Like to make it extremely challenging for me to get in. Like, I have to work extra hard, be extra calculating, you know, do a couple extra moves and things like that in order to be successful. And I think it's the same way, you know, when we talk about really making adversaries have to work hard, right? On when you properly manage attack surfaces, when you properly manage the assets that you have, the number of them, like, do you need them? Do you know what they do? Can they be decommissioned? Are they upgraded appropriately? Is the vendor still putting out updates? You know, has it expired? You know, when you're answering all those questions, when you're using CIS benchmarks to proactively, you know, harden and create a baseline, right? When you're doing all those things, it makes it harder. You think of a hacker as a striker. It makes it so hard to, like, yeah, find that spot.
You know, that's wonderful. And by the way, I don't know if you knew this, but I coached club soccer for about 16 years.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I've never played the game. So I'm like reading textbooks, trying to figure out how to coach these talented young people that were on my club. But the, but yeah, they, you know, and it, that notion of the goalie, right? Because they're taught they're changing angles mm-hmm. constantly mm-hmm. to reduce that mm-hmm. attack surface. Mm-hmm. And so it's a dynamic problem.
Very
so dynamic. I have to share another story. So I once posed a thought piece at a Pentagon meeting with a bunch of, you know, highfalutin right. smart people
right.
and uniformed people. Right. And they I think they almost laughed me out of the right, right. room, by the way, because I said this. Right. Let me propose a thought piece for our discussion here. If the DoD were a nimble adopter of technology, right, what impact would that have on attackers? Because mm-hmm. the DoD is, you know, yeah. reputation was, yeah. takes us years yeah. to acquire new to systems acquire as new slow as, yeah. we have this ponderous, you know, processes to certify them. So no one wants to change anything because you got to redo a lot
right.
of work.
All the paperwork.
But imagine if we could quickly bring in new versions, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. quickly keep them up to speed, patch them, hot fixes, manage them to the latest information. What impact would that have? So people were laughing, but I don't think they were laughing at me. They were laughing at the notion of agility, right? That we could be nimble. Yet, again, having observed closely, and at NSA, many people were cross-trained. I've worked both, you know, during their careers. That is a tremendously risky and expensive proposition for the attacker because it takes some time. They have to build infrastructure. They got to invest in tools. They got to do reconnaissance. And they don't want to get caught. They don't want to have to redo it, right? And there's, if you think of, right, the attacker, their path is surprisingly fragile. It's easy to say, oh, nation state attackers, they got so much money. They do. But if you understand, then there's, you know, there are fragile points that you have to. And so this sort of, you know, point counterpoint, you know, dynamics of defense is inherent in soccer, right? It's constant, and teaching kids to see, again, I'm coaching kids up to the high school level, getting them to high school, to see the, you know, you're a defender, that I do not want you to stay in this patch of grass.
That's right.
Because if you see the context over here,
that's right.
You see the lane.
Yes.
And you know, this person can get you yes. the ball of that far post.
Yes.
Go for it.
Go right? for it.
You see your other mid head up. There's a gap you've got to fill.
Exactly.
And so this whole dynamic of defense, right? Teaching that, which is unnatural for a lot of
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
kids.
Yeah.
And especially again, for me, who's learning yeah. this from books and clinics. So, but it does match up pretty well, right? This idea of we have positions, but we also have to understand the context and the impact that it has. So this attack service reduction, but you're still playing, right, Tina?
Yes. Yes. True? I still play. I'm currently taking a winter reprieve, but yes. Yeah. I just played in a tournament, over the summer, been in a regular season, played in a tournament just a few weeks ago. I coach my son's, U5, U6 team. So yeah, it's fun. It really is a lot of fun. Yeah. And I think it's ripe with so many analogies.
All right. So yeah. Sean had put together some sample questions. Let me okay. give you one. I'll just give you one of his.
Okay.
Can you name any own goals in cybersecurity?
Oh,
the things that we're doing to ourselves
gosh.
That turned out to be big mistakes.
Yeah. You know, I think that insider threat is some of the first thoughts that come to mind. And I think that, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, it's not like super intense or techie, but just the offboarding process alone, where does your offboarding process include a review of all accounts that employee had access to? And have you gone through and actually removed that access.
That is a place for significant mistakes because you're not focused on that. You're focused on the HR matter.
That's
right. When you're dealing with
that's
that.
Exactly yeah. no, it. And
okay.
it's like
good example. I'll,
yeah.
You get a goal on that.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah. Strike. Goal.
All right. So let me finish up with another of Sean's questions. Right. So you're the coach now. We're going to stick with the soccer business here, and. Look, if you're trying to defend yourself, small, medium businesses, right, it's got to feel hopeless. And you deal with lots of folks who are going, I don't understand a word of this. I can't afford this. What's your halftime locker room pep talk for that community, right? What should, where can they take hope? What, you know, you're going to look for that nugget of positivity, right? To give them something to work into that second half.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Yeah. Yeah.
Coach.
So,
what do you got, coach?
I think my summary statement in it, it's cyber insecurity is not inevitable. That has been my tagline. And I think that it would be having them to focus, and it's something that I've talked about, is think about where are your most important assets. Let's just focus on what can you not afford to happen to your systems or your data? Which ones that would put you out of business? Let's focus right there, and let's hone our resources and attention on where your primary system or systems and data are. What can you not afford to happen to your business to be able to continue? And that's where I would start. And tell them to focus.
You know, you're right. And people do get paralyzed, right? They get overwhelmed by the acronyms and the language. But if you're a responsible business owner, right, you know, I can't afford the loss of this information, or I have to have 100% confidence that's correct, or I can't afford to be offline for a period of time because of the effect on my cash flow or whatever. And that you don't have to understand exotic threats or nuanced, you know, technologies. You have to understand your business. And that's exactly right. That's the fair place to start. Now, if they don't have a handle on that, they have other problems.
Right.
But I think that's a good starting point.
Exactly. Yeah. And it also puts it in a language and in a frame and a context that makes it seem less overwhelming, right? Like it's really about, you know, what's really, really, really important. So what we're talking about is protecting what's really, really, really important. So let's focus right there, right?
I've often said, I'm sure I repeat myself. I appreciate your patience with the old guy here, but I said, you know, that this model of our business is what I call the wizardry model of security. Right. You know, wizardry. Oh, my gosh, it's exotic technology. I got these expensive people. And one of our board members one time said, you know, when she was coming up there, she goes, yeah. And the technologist, you know, I asked them what's going on and they speak dolphin to me. All I hear is squeaks and, you know, I have no idea what they're saying to me. And yeah, but exactly. But hey, guess what? What wizardry is really good for? It's great for job security for old guys like me, because you got to pay me.
Right,
you have
right,
no idea what
right,
I'm doing,
right,
but
right.
You got to pay me. But it's terrible public policy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it does not allow us to get better.
Yes, yes.
It doesn't. It's a barrier, because at the end of the day, we need a thriving economy. We need confidence in our systems. We need people to feel like, you know, they can operate, you know, in an environment that's not. It doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be confidence inspiring. That's why we our tagline at CIS, right? Confidence in a connected world, not security or
right.
perfection.
Yeah.
In a
yeah.
connected world.
Yeah.
And that's unreasonable. So I think that, you know, yeah. again, the things that you have chosen to focus on, we really appreciate here at CIS.
Absolutely.
In line with philosophically what we think really matters.
Yeah.
And we appreciate, you know, again, it's a bit of an uphill fight. You're fighting with wizardry and exotic yeah. technology and
right.
all that. But it does take discipline.
Yes. Yeah.
And it takes planning, right?
Yes.
And it's good about good management.
Yes. Yes.
That, again, is important no matter what level of adversary and no matter what level of risk. We have to be able to do better. But we also have to be able to do this in a way that people will accept, understand, know what the trade-off is, right? We also have to match, and you've probably watched our work with public policy and state laws. You know, how do I change the incentives? I can't scare people into action. I can't inspire them, but they have to look at this as a business decision. And if investing money in good technology allows me to operate with greater confidence in case of a loss, that's an incentive, right? That's something that will help us all in the long run. So, well, Tina, so we can go on for hours, and I'm sure we'll find another occasion here, but any last thought you'd care to leave with our audience here? You have the attention of quite a few folks who are, you know, part of the extended family here at CIS.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one, I would say just really quick plug in the spirit of like free tools, things are accessible. Google actually funded us to create a version of our tool that was free for smaller businesses. And so sideaploy.com/owl this, so like the animal, owl and this. And you can get a device inventory. So, you know, whatever device you run on. It can tell you what other connections it has, what else it's talking to, and also an application inventory. So go through and tell you all the
applications. We'll make sure to get that link in our show notes for anyone who wants it.
Yes.
You're happy to point to that. Thanks for
Absolutely. Okay. And yeah, I think just keep in mind, my halftime locker room talk is that, you know, cyber insecurity is not inevitable. So there are, you know, just measured steps that you can take. Approachability is one of the values of my services company. And that approachability is making sure that cybersecurity is understandable. It is not wizardry or, you know, magic. There are just disciplined, small, very accessible steps that you can take, large and small organizations towards a better managed approach to cybersecurity.
Super. Okay. Well, I appreciate your optimism. I share it even after I'm approaching 5 decades now.
Yeah, I know.
And if you heard my riff on this, right? You can't survive for long in this industry unless you're one of two personality types, complete cynic or hopeless optimist.
Right.
And both parties have all the data they need to convince themselves they are right.
That's right.
So choose optimism.
Exactly.
Choose
optimism. Please choose optimism. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Tina. It's a pleasure to speak with you here. And for our audience, always open to your feedback. Please subscribe to us in the usual ways. Always interested in answering some of the questions that you have about this complicated business. So with that, we'll catch you next episode. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.